This is Jenny Lee Fowler, author of Organic Social Media, How to Build Flourishing Online Communities, and you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where every Friday I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book. This show has been named one of the top marketing podcasts by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others, and has millions of downloads and listeners in over 185 countries. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, connect and message me on LinkedIn, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. And to make sure you never miss an episode, you have a few options. The best way is to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app, like Apple Podcasts, or go to marketingbookpodcast.com and sign up for email notifications. Or if you're on LinkedIn, find the Marketing Book Podcast page and click the subscribe button and maybe meet some of your fellow listeners. All right, let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome Jenny Lee Fowler to talk about her book, Organic Social Media, How to Build Flourishing Online Communities, published by Kogan Page. Jenny Lee Fowler is Director of Social Media Strategy at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, home of the Fighting Engineers, and Tim the Beaver.
O-M-A-S-S-A-C-T-U-S-C-T-T-S-I-N-S-T-I-T-U-T-E-O-F-T-E-C-H-N-O-L-O-G-N-Y comes after G. It's the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Hey!
She is in charge of developing and executing institute-wide social media initiatives and campaigns and provides social media consultation and direction for, get this, more than 250 departments, labs, and centers. She also manages MIT's flagship X, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Threads, and TikTok accounts. Prior to MIT, she served as a social media manager and web editor for the Harvard Kennedy School of Government.
Hello, Harvard, yo.
And, interesting fact, earlier in her career, she was a TV reporter and news anchor.
From all of us here at Channel 4 News, I'm Veronica Corningstone. And thanks for stopping by.
Jenny, congratulations on Organic Social Media and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you. I am so glad to be here. And wow, what an intro.
You won't get that on any other podcast, just so you know.
I am so impressed. And I am just pleased as punch to be here.
Well, great. Well, now just I'm curious, when you were in television news all those years, did you ever run into a guy named Ron Burgundy?
No, I'm afraid I never got to meet him in person.
That's probably a good thing. Yeah. So now you live in the Boston area. Is that correct?
I do.
Do you need any appliances?
Are you offering me some?
Well, no, but if you're in the Boston area and you need to buy some appliances or even just get some good advice on which appliances to buy, you need to check out Yale Appliance. Now, Jenny, I know what you're thinking. They are not a sponsor, but the CEO of Yale Appliance, which has three very nicely appointed showrooms, is a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Ah.
And it really drives him nuts when I encourage my listeners to go to Yale Appliance and ask for the Marketing Book Podcast special, because there isn't one. But one day he contacted me and said, "Would you stop saying that?"
It's interesting that it's Yale Appliances. Is he a Yale affiliate? Because at Harvard, you know, when I was working there, our rivals was Yale.
The Bulldogs. Yes, yeah. That's true. And no, he did not go to Yale. And it's I think it's a 100-year-old family company, and one of his great grandfather may have named it after you. I don't remember that. I remember that was the first question I asked. So anyway, just to, you know, cause trouble, go to the showroom, folks, ask for Steve Sheinkoff, tell him you want the special Marketing Book Podcast treatment, and just watch how things start to come together for you. So
perfect.
And this is going to be like episode 475, I think. I have not read a book by a former journalist that is not an excellent read. And your book is just one of many more affirmations of that observation. When I see an author was a journalist, I right off the bat, I move them up the stack. And
this was terrific.
I really, really enjoyed it. And I'd also like to say at the outset that this book has so much great advice for not just marketers who work in social media, but any marketers. And so much of what's in your book, yeah, it applies to social media, but it also applies to a lot of things. Content and how to manage up and how to teach your colleagues and explain to them what they need to know. It's a really a superpower. And I should also mention, this week I spoke to a university social media marketing class here in town, and they had really, really good questions. And I kept telling them that a number of those questions were answered in this book.
Amazing. I love that.
Yeah. So there you go. Now, I want to read from just two places at the beginning of the book. And again, there are so many things we could talk about that it's going to be frustrating for you. And it was frustrating for me that we can't cover everything in the limited time we have. But I want to quote from a couple of places in the preface where you write, "Organic social media is alive and well. It just takes a lot of time, dedication, and a solid social media strategy. In this book, I provide my framework for creating a social media strategy that is sustainable, repeatable, and includes approaches to level up on it so that a social media following can become an engaged and loyal community." And then a couple pages later, you write, "This book is for both rookie social media managers as well as seasoned social media professionals. It gives new managers a structure to build a social media strategy and tips to succeed in the position, and veteran professionals a unique perspective on navigating the challenges of the jobs and steps to help advance the position." So years ago, when Mark Twain was still around, he was in London, and a bunch of rumors started circulating in the American press that he had become sick and passed away. And he sent a telegram back to the press and said, "The report of my death was an exaggeration."
Now, I think I knew that.
Yeah, I mean, it's often some people say he said rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated, but yes, apparently he said the report of my death was an exaggeration, which I always thought was funny and something only Mark Twain would say. Now, the title of your book is Organic Social Media, so a lot of people are going to wonder two things. One is, what is organic social media? And I just have to mention, when I posted a picture of your book on LinkedIn, as I do every week to let folks know what's coming, one listener, Patty Grasher from Portland, Oregon, jokingly confused your book with the topic with organic food. She said, does organic mean I have to pay more for it? Yeah, all the out-of-work comedians listen to the Marketing Book Podcast. But the other thing I was wondering when I saw it was, the title is Organic Social Media, and I immediately thought, is organic social media still a thing? So,
fair.
And because, you know, a lot of the platforms want to push it down where you have to pay to get more exposure, and it used to be really quite easy years ago, 15 years ago maybe. Now, why do you disagree that organic social media is dead?
Well, because I've made a living off of doing it. And, you know, and sitting here and, you know, seeing a lot of people talk about, you know, organic is dead, or organic, is that still a thing? You know, like you just mentioned, you know, I think made me want to really speak for the side, for those of us that are still grinding and doing it every day, right? It is still very much a thing. And, just, you know, to answer your question, what is organic social media? It's just, you know, content, you post content, and, you know, it's not, no money is involved. You're not boosting posts. You're not paying for social ads. You're not doing paid campaigns. It's just purely organic. And I like to say that it's the way that social media is meant to be consumed and enjoyed, is on the organic side. And for marketers who do paid, I do believe that in order to have a strong paid campaigns and paid presence, it starts with a foundation of a strong organic presence. Because if you know what your audience likes organically, they're just organically engaging with content, then you know that they're saying, wow, this really resonates with me, and it would do well on a paid side.
And you would argue that paid social media is not wrong. It's not a bad thing, and there's a role for it, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just think that it goes hand in hand. You know, it complements the paid social.
Yeah. So for all you paid social media folks out there, we're not hating on you, okay?
No.
This is just one of the many aspects of marketing out there. So
exactly.
Now, we got to talk about strategy and tactics briefly here. On page one, you write that if you ask 10 social media managers to define strategy, chances are you'll get 10 different responses. And you say that you would guess that they all share some similarities and be variations of each other, but they won't be identical. Mm-hmm. Jenny Lee Fowler, what is yours?
Well, for me, you know, I started to use the game of chess as an example to explain the difference. So, you know, you can play chess and you can know how to move the pieces, but you might not really have a goal in mind. You're playing technically, but if you're just moving pieces, then that's all you're doing, right? And so each move that you make is like a tactic, but are they all working in conjunction with each other? Are they all focused on a certain goal? Now, if you play with the goal of winning in mind, then you form a strategy going into it when you start. So you might have you do have a strategy. You know how you're going to start, but then you make observations. You start to see how your opponent reacts. You see where they're positioning their pieces, and you make observations, and then you make tactical strategic responses and thoughts, and you're playing with the goal of winning in mind, and that's strategy. You're not just moving the pieces around.
Right. Like just random social media activity, right?
Exactly.
Now, I don't recall that chess analogy was in the book.
No, it wasn't in the book. It was just something that came to mind. It was like, you know, as people were asking me more about it, and I wanted to sort of add to what I wrote in the book, and that's what I came up with.
Okay, so listeners, what you just heard was a Marketing Book Podcast extra.
Sweet.
That's right.
Not going to get that in the book. So,
no.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Now, one of my favorite quotes about strategy and tactics is from Sun Tzu, the Chinese military general, strategist, philosopher. And he allegedly said, strategy, what's that?
The Art of War?
From The Art of War. Thank you. Yeah. And it's like Mark Twain quotes. You kind of have to be careful. But strategy without tactics is the slowest route to victory. Tactics without strategy is the noise before defeat. And your chess analogy works perfectly with that. So
yeah, it's nice to know that I'm in line with the great Sun Tzu.
Oh, yes. So now, you write that when you first took a job that was solely dedicated to social media, you had an early conversation with your boss that was a complete game changer for you. Tell us about that.
It was. You know, when you start a position, you're really enthusiastic to start to prove yourself. And I had a list of all of these things that I wanted to do. And I was like, you know, let's do this and this and this. And she said that those all sound terrific and I support them. However, those are tactics. She said, we need you to think strategically about our entire social media presence. And I just looked at her and my brain, like a light bulb went off in my brain.
She sounds like a great boss.
She is, actually. She is amazing, and she's totally supportive, and she's helped me grow a lot in my position. So I'm very thankful to her. I think I just kind of looked at her and tried to fake not, you know, or fake being sort of shocked in that moment. And that was a total, you know, game changer. It just sort of got me thinking in a different direction, and it really leveled up my game of thinking strategically.
Oh, terrific. Well, sort of related to the chess story, you write that in the past you would picture strategy as something that was linear.
Yes.
And I could completely identify that. But then you started to imagine strategy as a tree, and then that was sort of an aha moment for you. Explain. I loved that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I think I'm very, I'm a very step-by-step kind of person. You know, you do this and then you take the next step and this comes after. And in my head, that's sort of a line when you think step-by-step. And that's when I was practicing social media like that, I realized it was a little bit limiting. Like I was almost limiting myself because, you know, you're on one thing, but then a new project or your goals will grow. There'll be new goals, but you're all aiming toward the same target. You know, there'll be new efforts. There'll be changes within a platform. New platforms will sprout up. And then it just made me think of roots growing and branches growing and this tree just, flourishing and growing. But, your trunk is still very much your foundational strategy. And that just grows in strength. And when that continues to grow and become stronger, and you form more branches and, you have this beautiful growing tree, right?
Right. And so that you don't really have to cut down the whole tree. You can change a leaf.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So that was very helpful. And you also talk about a lot of this as being a marathon. And I just, I never get tired of that analogy because so many people in the business world are probably thinking, I want to be a marathon winner. Go flick that switch. There's a little bit that goes into it. And I can't run the miles for you. There's
right.
certain things you got to do. So as I was reading through the book, I don't know, maybe you've often wondered what people think while they're reading through your book. But when I got to page 8, this was going through my mind.
Beer.
Did you say beer?
Yeah. So that's
okay.
That's well. Actually, I should be fair. That's something that goes through my mind frequently. But your framework for every social media strategy includes 6 M words.
Right.
So if you could.
Oh, okay. I just got it. Very nice.
I'm going to need you to downshift your intellect just a little bit so you can keep up with me here. No, I'm kidding. But that's why so many guests come on the show, because they're not the least bit intimidated by my intellect. So.
Oh, I don't think that's what it is.
Talk about what they are, if you would, briefly, what these 6 M words are, because they're really, really helpful. And if anyone's listening to this in the conference room, just go ahead and write them on the whiteboard right now.
Great. So my 6 M's are mission, message, management, medium, metrics, and monitoring. And you might be interested to know that it used to be 5, the 5 M's, but I add this monitoring 6, several years ago because it just became so important.
Yes. Yes. And so when you talk about mission, you write, what are the goals, which we'll talk about in a minute. And you're saying, I'm not referring to the company's mission. The social media mission should differ from the mission of the entire organization. Your social media mission, should you choose to accept it.
That's right.
Don't think I don't catch these jokes, Jeannie Lee Fowler. It's more like a mission James Bond or John Wick would take on, an assignment to meet a specific objective. And then the message, and then the management, and we're going to touch on all of these, the medium, the metrics, what are you tracking, monitoring, are you mining that rich vein of insight and performance? So we'll talk about all of these. But there's one other thing I wanted to ask about, and that had to do with algorithms.
These algorithms, they are the digital equivalent of AR-15s. They ought to be banned. They really ought to be banned.
Thank you, Al Gore. So why is your philosophy not to base too many decisions on what you think an algorithm is going to do or might do?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, if you're just trying to figure out the algorithm or what it's doing or chasing after it every time it changes, that's all you'll be doing, right? You won't actually
chasing your tail.
I just feel like we should let the algorithms do what they're supposed to do. And really, they're supposed to get to know you and your behaviors and your preferences and your likes and adapt to it. And I think that if we change what we do every time or too often, just because you think the algorithm changed, then you're sort of doing the reverse. Instead of, you know, letting it get to know your habits, you're trying to adapt to it. So you're constantly changing. And so it's not, you're not really giving it time and space to get to know you. So,
right. You're not helping the algorithms do what they need to do to help you. Right.
That's what I think, at least.
Yeah. I mean, the algorithms are, I think, interesting to follow, but let's create for humans first.
Yes.
Before we focus on the, you know, how all these different things work. One other thing we could talk more about this in a minute, but you talk about creating content with your audience in mind. And I want to quote, when executing a strategy to build a community, your content should be centered on what your audience wants from your brand, not what one person or what leadership thinks your audience needs or should hear from your brand. Oh, my goodness. I mean, that was the beginning of what I thought was I was reading a support group. So
I'm here for you. I'm here for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So is that – it must be. That must be a common problem.
It is. It seems sort of like a no-duh kind of thing, but it's – you know, I've learned that people need to hear that you know your content is for your audience, not for you or one person.
Right. So in one of those 250 different departments you're dealing with, actually you're probably out of time. I mean, we probably can't continue this. So for all those folks at MIT listening, if you've been trying to reach her, she'll be there soon.
That's why.
Right. But do they must be coming to you saying, "Hey, yeah, whatever. This is what I need you to blast out."
Well, so the funny thing is all of those departments, labs, and centers have their own social media presence, and they have their own communicator or social media manager. But I am here to help them, to advise and consult and help them think through strategy. And also, you know, sort of those hurdles or pain points when the social media manager says, you know, this is our goal or this is what we need to focus on, but so-and-so keeps on telling us to go this direction or this is the type of content that they keep on requesting me to post. And so I try to help them through those pain points and give them like conversational guides.
So that explains it. And that's why you're not completely out of your mind. Also, it sounds like you're a social media therapist.
A little bit, yes. I'm here to educate and explain, and I'm here to help everyone at MIT have the best presence so that all of our whatever social media affiliate channel you run into, the experience is, you know, the same. We would like it to be the same.
Oh, that's so interesting. So, I love these Kogan Page books. They often only have 10 chapters. And the chapter on social media goal setting, I had to laugh once again when you wrote, you wouldn't buy a hammer just for the sake of buying a hammer and then decide to build a bookshelf. I'm stealing it. I'm sorry.
I love it. Please take it.
Full attribution. But you write, goals are the reason for an organization, business, center, team, nonprofit, whatever the case may be, to use social media. It is important to remember that your goals should be set first. And if it's determined that a social media channel could help you to meet any of those goals, only then should you create a strategy for using social media channels. I get the impression that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, there, you know, a lot of, when it comes to social media, I've seen a lot of people want to put the cart before the horse. It's like that shiny new thing or that shiny new trendy social media platform that people hear about, and all of a sudden they're asking their social media team or social media person, why aren't we on platform XYZ, you know? But, you know, there's a lot of discovery work that needs to happen in order to do something successfully, especially manage a social media channel successfully. And a lot of times that step gets overlooked. And then when it comes time to do or post, there's nothing there, or there's no thought into it. And so the channel doesn't do well. So the goal shouldn't be just to be on a channel, right?
Right. Yeah. We need a Threads account. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Well, now again, this goes back to some of the questions I got from university students, some of whom are like interns mm-hmm. working for companies, and they're asking these questions. And so, in your book, you write like about some of these things. So, what I want to ask is, what happens if the goals are things like getting our message out there, or creating buzz, or our competitors on social, so we need to be on the same channels, or we're looking to make the world a better place, or yeah. we want to continue being a leader in our field. You know,
everyone has those goals, right?
Yeah, yeah. I gather that happens a lot. You wrote about it a lot. And just this week, I heard from a bunch of students who are frustrated, mm-hmm. one of whom was a marketing analytics student. And she was saying, yeah, I can do this, but what is the point? What is this company trying to do? So talk to folks that are getting very ill-defined goals, if any at all.
Right, right. It actually pains me to hear students, you know, now are still running into this. But I think then it's our job and our responsibility to really sort of narrow it down and get specific. So one suggestion that I recommend is that you go on a listening tour, because, you know, oftentimes the people within the organization, or, you know, the employees that are working there really know the organization the best, or, you know, they're fans of the organization, and they are, if anything, they're ambassadors. They're your built-in ambassadors. So I always recommend going on a listening tour. Talk to a lot of people. Talk to people in different departments. You know, when I first get to a new organization, I'm buying so many people coffee. I'm just taking people out to lunch, taking people out to coffee, and I just, you know, ask them things like, you know, what is something that you're proud of about the company, or what is it something about the company that no one knows but you think is really awesome? Or, you know, if you can tell people one thing, one great thing about the company, what would that be? And, you know, I found in my experience that, you know, they're the same answers will start to bubble up, or they'll start to say the same similar things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, maybe they'll say, you know, we have a really great parental leave program, but nobody knows about it. Or maybe it's an organization, maybe it's a university, and they're like, you know, we have a national champion women's volleyball team, and nobody knows about it, you know? So I think when you start to hear these things that, like, they feel that are not known about the organization, that's the messaging you can make into your goals. You know, you can say, we're helping to make the better world. I'm going to support that goal by saying that, you know, our parental leave is top notch, and telling that story in the social media space. Or maybe, you know, to have more brand recognition, well, we can do that by really showcasing our national champion volleyball team, because that's, you know, that shouldn't be a secret. Everyone should know about how proud we are about this stuff. So that's sort of the very specific messaging that you can put, you know, start to put out in your content and share on your social media channels. And you can say that that's in support of those, you know, very, very non-specific, squishy goals.
Yeah, you can start to, it's like, I remember in sales training, they would say that an apocryphal story, but they say that when medical students graduate, they go into a psychiatry residency, the first thing they teach them is the first problem the patient brings you is never the problem. Keep digging, keep digging. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of management, and as I call them, civilians, non-marketers, they'll be surprised that you're asking these kinds of questions, and it'll be very, very helpful. But I just wanted to quote this one part, primarily because it got me so fired up. And I want all the CEOs, and I want all these young students and everyone in between listening to this, because this is a very real problem. And it's from page 23. You write, there are organizations, usually due to antiquated beliefs and outdated business practices at the leadership level, where social media is still thought of as a separate and outside of their communications and marketing processes. Thus, they still operate under the guise that social media goals are different and apart from the organization's goals, and their social media goals continue to be unfocused and nonspecific. In other situations, the people who supervise social media managers either don't use social media or don't understand it and therefore aren't comfortable with giving the social media manager any guidance on how to tie the organization's goals into the social media strategy. Since the social media position is often an entry-level position, the social media manager may not feel experienced enough to determine the social media goals for the organization. It could be that it feels like too big a task or that the goals should be set by someone with more seniority in the organization. So for the junior people, I would say, don't be amazed that you're not getting these quietly and with leadership. You can start to elicit them from your from your management, and you'll be more successful because of it. So
yes.
All right, let me just calm down. You know, gather my thoughts here, because there were several like this where off to the side I wrote, "Wow!" exclamation point, or "Great!" I should send you. My marked up copy.
Yeah,
so you can get audience feedback. Yes,
feedback. I love it. And as you're reading these, I'm sort of, you know, picturing your book in my head with, like, you know, colorful sticky notes.
Yes,
you know,
all over.
Like all stuck out. And I love that. That's a great image. Thank you.
And as a favor to you and all the listeners, there are quite a lot of jokes I wrote in the column, which I'm not sharing. Okay. So you're welcome, everybody. All right. So let's go on and talk a little bit about audience, which we touched on in a few minutes ago. Let's talk about the late American actor, Jimmy Stewart, who, sorry, but he was a Princeton grad. So I hope you don't get in trouble with the MIT and your Harvard peeps.
No one said anything. We all like Princeton.
Okay.
This is a very interesting situation.
You write that he thought his fellow actors should treat their audiences as partners and not customers.
Mm-hmm.
I had never seen that. Explain why you like this so much.
Because we forget that, you know, our audience has very, you know, specific opinions and thoughts and feedback, which is really, really valuable to us and to the organization. And so, you know, if we think of them as partners that are working with us that can help us get better, you know, I think that's huge, instead of thinking we're here just to feed them messaging or, you know, entertain them or, you know, or that it's just one way. It's not a one-way communication anymore.
Yes, and as I touched on earlier, there's a treasure trove of information and insights that you could get if you would just listen.
Yes, 100%.
It's so you can start to develop insights based on a lot of the information you're providing. People think, "Oh, I want the world. The world is mine." But over the years, you've asked the question of many people, who are you trying to reach? And you write that a surprisingly large number say, we're trying to reach everyone.
Right.
Explain why this spray and pray strategy of distributing your content to the masses, hoping it will reach someone or even the right people. Why is this dead?
It's just not going to work. And a lot of times when they say, oh, you know, when they kind of, I know that they haven't thought about it, because they just look at me and they just go, oh, well, we just want our message to reach everybody, you know? And I just think you're just saying that because you haven't thought of the question, you know, you haven't really thought of this. Because, you know, everything is very, hyper-targeted these days, you know? And our audiences have very specific needs and wants and things that they value. And so you have to make sure your content is, you know, is really targeting those needs and values, or else you, it's too general. It's just not going to reach anybody.
Yeah, there are riches and niches, mm-hmm. as the cliche writers say.
I like it.
And this is also in the face of something you had on page 3. Just a reminder, there are almost 5 billion active social media users all talking on the internet at the same time, which I think is, you know, if somebody came to your office and they were, you know, trying to tell you how to do this, it's almost like you'd want to have some of these things up on the wall. Just say, no, just remember, you're up against 5 billion people. And I think, what was it? There's another section of the book where you talk about what happens in 1 minute.
How, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Just the volume of content that posts in 1 minute. And so, and then what makes your content above and beyond everyone else's that they will stop the scroll, you know, stop scrolling to read your content or look at it or watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to quote from page 43, which ties back into what I think is such a missed opportunity by companies just to listen. Listen to people. And it's under a subtitle that says, ask your audience. Mm-hmm. And you're right, I know this sounds obvious, and maybe it's too easy, which is why it's often overlooked. But I found that as communicators, and maybe as people in general, we forget to ask our audience what they think. Famous comedian and vaudeville star Fanny Brice said that an audience will tell you everything you need to know and give you better direction than a director.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
One other thing that I just thought really boosted your credibility, and this is, I think, something that anyone working in social media should keep in mind and maybe use. And this even came up, this is yet another thing that came up in the class the other day, where I kind of had Jenny Lee Fowler on the mind, on the brain that day.
Well, but thank you.
you write, I think it's on page 46, you write, I know I'm a social media professional, but I will be the first to tell you that social media is not always the best way to reach your communication goals or solve your communication dilemmas. Mm-hmm. What happens when you explain that to people?
I mean, it's, you know, sometimes a light bulb does go off, you know, and there is a sense of relief because sometimes they don't want to get into social media. So there is a sense of relief. But, you know, sometimes, you know, like a lot of people want to do things their own way and they think they know best.
Mm-hmm. Or they think, you know, social media is easy, which you talk about several times.
Right.
The book. And there was another story where I think you said you were working with one of your colleagues and they said, well, we want to use social media to find out what these students think. And you said, have you asked them?
Right.
I mean, they're right there on the campus.
Exactly.
And you love free pizza.
Exactly. That's what I say. I said, give them lunch and ask them these questions. And, you know, the answer is almost always no. You know, they look at me like, oh, we hadn't thought of that. Oh.
Yes. So now this is okay, I'm going to get all fired up again here. So I should get like a blood pressure monitor. But this, I want all the CEOs and the management out there listening to this, people who aren't really dealing with these kinds of things. And there seem to be a lot of people. I hear from a lot of folks who listen to this show, and they may even be senior people. And they were like head of engineering for 20 years. And they're like, now they've given me marketing as well. They're trying to figure out what am I supposed to. I've had friends from college.
Wow.
This one friend, engineer, he suddenly, after 25 years maybe, he became the president of this manufacturing company. He said, Doug, this isn't something I've been working in. He called me and he says, what do I need to know? What are these people supposed to be doing? How can I help them?
Wow.
And we had a nice conversation, and he was like, oh, God, thank you. I had it's just not a stupid guy, but just not something that he'd been dealing
with. Right, right.
But this is about the dangers of catering to an audience of one. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I know many social – page 53 for those playing the home game. I know many social media managers who are in the tight spot because they report to a person who demands to have content posted the way they want it to be posted without considering other factors and not keeping the broader audience in mind. Often in these cases, the person making all the demands is not a social media user. Thus, they have little to no understanding of how the platforms work, let alone best practices or user expectations. These situations are tough because on the one hand, you don't want to go against your boss. But on the other hand, you are the expert in this situation and you want to do your job. Plus, the content you post is a reflection of you and your work. And I think what's important is what we'll talk about in a few minutes is that you said that you have to answer a lot of questions and you have to you're constantly teaching people. Mm-hmm. And there's one part in your book where you make it really clear. If you're going to be successful as a social media marketing person or as a marketing person, you have got to get comfortable answering a lot of the same questions over and over every time a new person comes into your orbit that you're working with. Again, these are probably not stupid people you're dealing with. They just don't know. And right. There have actually been a number of books on the show over the many years now, about marketing leadership. And it doesn't mean they're in charge. It just means the really effective marketers are the ones that are leading their organization, perhaps such that the organization doesn't even realize they're being led. in the right direction. They're walking the halls, they're answering questions, they're listening quite a bit, and they're showing a lot of their organization what is possible. And this actually came up in the part of your book we'll talk about in just a minute on reporting. Again, this is choosing the right platforms. And I also have to say that I normally do one interview a week, and this week I did two because I had an opening last week. And this week, it was another Kogan Page author named Julie Atherton, and it was a second edition of her excellent book, Social Media Strategy.
Yeah.
And she touched on a number of the same things, and mm-hmm. I don't think you know her or checked with her, but don't just take my word for it, folks. You probably heard that interview by now if you listen to it every week. And this one had to do with choosing the right platforms. You have a whole mm-hmm. chapter on it. Very important. And it the problem seems to be, amongst others, that there's an additive nature of being a marketing person. Like, sure, we'll add that. Sure, we'll add that. I think you call it check the box social media.
That's right.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do here was mention that you've worked with a lot of social media managers who felt obligated or pressured to take on basically every new platform that starts to gain a little bit of momentum. And when I mean a little bit of momentum, it means the boss read about it in an in-flight magazine and thinks that it's the next big thing. And then on page 67, you also write, all too often a new social media account is started because a senior leader asks, why aren't we on such and such a platform? Mm-hmm. Talk about what people should be thinking and doing instead, or to try to prepare for this.
Right. I think it's important when, because you'll see the platforms, right? Chances are you will see them or hear about them before, someone in senior leadership asks that question. So I think it's just good to just look into the data, lead with the data, check if any of your peers are on the platform. Chances are the answer is no, or you check to see if your audience is on the platform, if you have a certain demographic you're going after or a certain, a certain niche audience, like, are they even using the platform? Or maybe the platform is utilized for a very specific industry that's not your industry, and just having that information, ready to go when you get asked the question is really helpful. And at the very least, they know that you have, you've done your research and you're keeping an eye on it. So at the very least, it'll buy you some time.
Right? Yes. And I love you have a conversational guide in that chapter.
I do.
On how to talk to the boss or to anyone who comes along and says, what about this? And you write, about it being a managing up moment, which was a great thread that went through your book. And also, you talk in this chapter about content audits. mm-hmm. which can be helpful in that instance. Tell the story about when you started a new position and you did an audit of all the channels you were hired to manage on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
It's a surprising outcome.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of your job, right? When you come in, you really need to have a good idea of the channels that we're on, the types of content we're sharing on all of the channels, how well they're doing. And there was a particular channel I didn't understand why we were on that channel, because it wasn't a particularly popular higher ed channel, and our content didn't. It wasn't necessarily a perfect fit. One of the quote unquote executive decisions I made when I started the channel is to stop the channel. I mean, we still have the channel, but I just said, you know, we don't need to keep posting in this channel. We're going to stop being active in this channel. And honestly, like, no one ever asked me about that channel.
And I bet no one knew why they were there. I mean, it was just, you know, and it reminds me of that great advice. It's better to beg forgiveness than ask permission.
Right. Yeah. I think you need to choose your moments with that one, but I do prefer that. I do like that tactic a lot.
Well, you have table 4.1, which is a content audit chart, really simple. And it's great to do that when you start in the job, but and also to keep monitoring it. But also it seems that when the boss comes in, I keep painting this picture, and they say, why aren't we on you twit face? It's a new it's the Conan O'Brien joke about one day when Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube merge, it's called you twit face. Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, and he went to Harvard. Okay, so this has got this Ivy League strain going through this conversation. But it seems like if you have something like this where you're evaluating things, it goes back to what you said. You could say, yes, boss, we're familiar with it. We've added it into the on the watch list, and we're evaluating it based on these criteria like we have for the ones we are on. It just seems like that would diffuse a whole lot of it. Like, yeah. Oh, great. So you have a handle on it. I mean, I think really they just want to know you're watching this. You're monitoring it. You know, it's like a patient coming into the doctor saying, have you heard about this new drug that I saw in an NFL game, you know, and the doctor will say, yeah, we're familiar with that. We're just not ready to, you know, say, okay, I just want to make sure you guys know about it. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So true. Such a good point.
So in chapter 5 on content, you write that if social media is the engine, then content is the fuel.
That's right.
And it takes a lot of fuel to run this engine effectively. Do you find that a lot of people underestimate this?
Yes, more than you would think. You know, I've had conversations where, you know, people are interested in starting an Instagram account, and I think that's great. And so I'm always like, let's start thinking it through. I'm here to help you think it through. I said, so what source of photography or pictures, because Instagram is a very image-driven platform, what kind of images do you have? And I'll just get these answers like, we hadn't thought about that yet.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, and then, so then we have the conversation, okay, so what content do you currently have? Or, you know, or if Instagram is really important to you and you think there's an audience for there for you, are you willing to put resources into it? Like, is it that much of a priority where you are willing to, you know, give it time and money and management, you know? So, then we have a different conversation, right? So.
Yeah, and then their heads blow up, and I'm just kidding. But it's like buying a really, really nice car, and it has no fuel in it.
And right, and you can't take it anywhere.
You can't take it anywhere.
Ever. Yeah. It's stuck in the garage, exactly. Yeah.
Or it's like a website. A lot of companies will say, what we just need is a new website. And then, like Pedro, voting for Pedro, all our dreams will come true. And it's like, okay, great. You've built this website. It has like 35 visitors a month. It has absolutely no content.
No content, right.
It's not useful at all to your customers.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how, you know, content gets overlooked a lot.
Well, let's hope that maybe a few people will we'll learn from our conversation. Yeah. So tell us, what is the Jenny Lee Fowler Three Scrolls rule?
So my rule that I just kind of adopted really early, I guess, in my career, and I just called it that, and I shared it with someone, and they really liked it, so it stuck. But I think that the one time a follower or a user will go to your timeline or your profile page is to decide whether or not they want to follow you. And you have three scrolls. You know how we all kind of scroll that the way on our mobile phone mm-hmm. or devices? You have three scrolls before they will decide whether or not to follow you. And mm-hmm. that's it. That's all you get. And so I am constantly going back to our feed. Like, I am constantly consuming our content like a viewer. I go to our feeds to see what they're seeing in three scrolls of content. You know, is it, what story are you telling in three scrolls of content? Is it telling your full vast story? Is it showing multi facets of your organization? Or is it boring? Like, I like to ask people, would you follow you? You know, if you don't want to follow you, why are you expecting other people to follow you? You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I love the three scrolls rule.
Thank you.
It does a lot. So you argue that to know what's working, you don't need 100 things to look at. You argue, just look at engagement. Talk about that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I am convinced I built my career on engagement and just building on engagement. That engagements like likes and shares particularly, that's proof that a person liked your, like really enjoyed your comment that they, or your content, they took action on it, or they liked it so much they shared it to their audiences and followings. And that just, for me, a like or a share, that's a vote for that kind of comment mm-hmm. or content. That's a vote saying, I really like this type of content from you and I want to see more of it. So I've just really, you know, at a very, very basic level, have just tried to grow engagement. Like, I just, on our average engagement, our posts, the average engagements, I've just tried to stretch them over time. I've always seen that if you stretch your engagements or grow the number of engagement, then impressions and reach will also grow.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I found interesting, and you make a point of saying you should always look and find out what your worst performing content is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is that? What is that? I don't remember seeing that. I thought that's a great idea. And you also say, you ought to report on it.
You should.
Yeah.
Because you learn the most from mm-hmm. the content that doesn't work. A lot of the times our most successful content, I can pretty much, you know, probably guess that content was going to be successful. But it's the content that doesn't do well that we if we start to see patterns and we'll just say, gosh, you know, videos don't, our audience on this platform really doesn't enjoy videos. So we'll literally stop posting videos on that, at that platform. Or there's a certain phrase, like one time we noticed a lot of our worst performing content started with three Q or three questions to so-and-so. And so we just stopped using that phrase, 3Q or three questions, and wrote it in a different way.
Uh-huh.
So you just learn so much from your content that is not good.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. So there's another chapter on, I think it's on posting. You write that if you're the lone social media manager, which I gather is really quite commonplace, writing your daily procedures in a document helps with transparency and adds to your accountability.
There she is, Miss America.
Jenny Lee Fowler, why is it like being Miss America of your social media accounts?
Because there's something that when you there's something that makes it official when you write, put things in writing. And when people see it, they can kind of acknowledge it. And, you know, it just gives you authority and credibility. And it, it, you know, makes people understand. It's not, you know, it's not that I'm just waiting at my desk, or social media manager is not waiting at their desk asking people to post things. You know, that's not how it goes. There's a very specific process and thoughts and a strategy to when things are posted. So when writing it down really sort of helps people see and understand that.
Right. And because I just read this, I realize you didn't write this in the last week. When they award one of those top awards to the beauty pageants, I don't really watch those like I'm supposed to. They say something like, if for any reason you are unable to perform your duties, the runner-up should be able to easily access your process, on and on and on. So it's like they lay down the law with the winner of the pageant, and they say, you know, we've got a backup here.
You need to have a backup, right?
Well, and also it helps. It helps on so many other levels, but also I think it shows it, it back to this idea of maybe people who haven't worked in this or use social media, they don't really understand what you do. And when they see it all written down, they appreciate much more what goes into it, and quite a bit goes into it. And I just don't think people realize that.
Right, right. And it's an education moment.
So just a couple of specific things. You said that when you first started managing social media for a brand, the question you would hear most often at conferences, workshops, or any type of professional gathering was, what do you use for a content calendar? Why do you think that was such a popular question? I guess it still is.
Right, because we couldn't figure out, no one could really figure out how to do it right, or if we were doing it right, or what it's supposed to look like, you know? I think we had this understanding or misunderstanding, really, that other social media managers had it figured out and we didn't. and some people did, you know, some people did. And, you know, people would graciously let me look at their content calendar. But it just didn't click with me, because it's really the thing with a content calendar is that it's really helpful to have one, but there are no rules. It doesn't even have to be a calendar, you know. It can be like a spreadsheet, or it can be like a Google Doc, a well organized Google Doc, but a Google Doc, right?
Yeah,
or,
and you make the point that it needs to be your calendar. You don't
right.
have yes. So it could be very simple, but it's the one you use.
Yes, and that works for your workflow and your team and how you like to look at things.
Yeah, exactly. But we're also obsessed with, you know, the shiny object that you mentioned. We're obsessed with tools. I can remember years ago I was on a panel discussion in Washington, D.C., and it was about social media, and a great panel, folks were talking, and every time a specific tool was mentioned, all heads went down as people wrote it down.
Like, right.
Like, is that all you're listening for? I just wanted to say, folks, there's like 10,000 of these tools.
And you'll find that not every one of them does everything that you want.
Yes.
That's what I've learned.
And the same for the analytics tools that you talk about.
Yes, yes. There's always some that do really well in this one function and others that are really great in this other function, but none that do it all like they like to claim.
like the salespeople for those.
That's not my experience, you know. And not to say that they're not helpful. You know, we use some of those tools, and they are incredibly helpful. But, you know, it's not like they're doing everything excellently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, going into it with both eyes open. Now, there's just one more thing. Again, my blood pressure is going back up, but this is the one I wanted to quote from page 134. Blood pressure's going up for all the right reasons, Jenny Lee Fowler. And this is really, really important. And we've touched on it, but I've got to read it. It's, if you're a consultant or on the agency side and work with clients, you will find yourself explaining the same concepts, answering the same questions, and sharing the same cautionary tales over and over again. Although we may feel like our profession is not progressing, every education moment, every time we help someone understand an element of social media better, every opportunity we take to expand someone's knowledge about social media, we help to advance our field as a whole. Own your expertise and teach your colleagues that it's not as simple as they think. and at the same time demonstrate that you know what you're doing. Explaining things to those not as familiar with the concept while making the listener feel good about it is an underrated skill.
Yes. Yes.
Can you dig it?
Okay. So going on, just a couple other things I want to ask before we wrap up. A chapter on metrics. What you should be tracking on social media. You mentioned vanity metrics, which everyone's heard of. Mm-hmm. And you go on to explain that metrics are not actually vain. People are vain. Mm-hmm. Explain what you mean there.
Well, you know, the facts are facts, right? It's just the stories that we tell around them. So it's important for us to, you know, be good stewards of the analytics, because it's, you know, it's not necessarily that large numbers are impressive or small numbers are not meaningful. It could actually be the other way around, but it just depends on the context. You have to give the full picture and tell the full story. So if, you know, if you're just putting large numbers to put large numbers in front of someone, then you're just sort of feeding your own ego or the person's that you're reporting to. It's meaningless, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, one question you mentioned that you're asked a lot is, what should I be tracking? And you often tell people when they're starting out to measure just one or two metrics. Talk about that. That, again, another surprising thing people may be hearing.
I just think, you know, if based on what your goal is, right? If you're new and you're trying to grow your audience, then, you know, it's important to look at follower count. Or if you're trying to see how a certain campaign is performing and the content in a campaign, then engagement might be the number that you want to look at. But I just say, you know, sometimes looking at all the numbers can be a little bit overwhelming. So just start by looking at one or two and look at them like all the time. And then they'll start to tell you a story. I know that sounds funny.
Well, what would be an example of one?
Right. So I, you know, one would be if you start knowing what your, you'll start to see what your averages are, right? What's the average number of posts you get, or engagement you get? And then you'll know if a post is doing really well and if a post is underperforming. And then you can kind of dig into why, right? And so maybe it was like a certain influencer that liked a certain piece of content, and you can hopefully repeat that. Or maybe it's an influencer in your audience that you're wanting to reach. And if that's the type of content they like, then if you can repeat it, then hopefully you'll reach more of that type of person in your community, right? So, so just if you look at the same numbers, they will start to mean something to you. And I say if they don't, then pick different numbers to look at.
Yeah, you mentioned that you pay a lot of attention to public interactions. What would that be defined as?
Right. They're the numbers that are available, that you can see them. I can see them. Everyone can see them. Is that the likes and the comments and the shares. Mm-hmm. And I just find that is a real view. It's a real interaction. The thing I don't like about impressions and reach so much is that it means, you know, that content, that piece of content reached someone's timeline, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they saw it, you know?
Right. So do they all have different definitions of the different platforms? The impression might mean something different.
Right. Sometimes, yes. And then impressions are usually different from reach, you know? And so but it doesn't guarantee that someone actually saw that piece of content, which is why I don't particularly love it so much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me just ask one other thing from that section. And again, this is the great career advice. And you write that you've learned that when it comes to social media, higher-ups may not necessarily know what to ask for. And I see mm-hmm. that all the time. Talk mm-hmm. about this idea you introduce of just developing reports for management. And it doesn't even mean that they've asked for it. In fact, most of what's in your book, you're not going to be asked for it. Just do it.
Yes.
And watch what happens.
It's true.
Yeah. But right. Talk about this report.
Exactly. So I think it's just really important for you to get in front of the people that are that you're reporting to, right? And doing like a monthly report, an annual report, it just, you know, I probably recommend more than once a year, but it helps them know your name. It helps you get in their inbox. It kind of gives you an opportunity for education moments. Mm-hmm. You know, what is doing well, what is not doing well, and slowly when you do that, and you know, and it's sparking their interest, then it starts to help you build a relationship and a credibility with them. And so when they know what your name is and who you are and feel like you know, they know what you're doing, then when in times of crisis or when things go bad, they will ask for your opinion or recommendation, or at least, you know, want you to chime in.
Yes, yes. And so if it's a big enough organization, folks, don't be surprised when you walk in and they say, now, who are you?
Right. Exactly.
I had to chuckle when I was like, they don't know who it is. And it's just, I mean, they're busy. They assume all these professions. There's a lot of people that right. probably don't know with their organization. But
right.
the thing about the crisis communications was so important because social media is such a big part of that. And also, if you've met them at least once, you are going to do much better when that crisis happens. Heck, you might even be able to introduce the idea of developing a crisis communications plan before you need it.
Yes, exactly.
And the CEO is going to need to be involved in that. So just two other things I want to ask from the book, and this is probably the most important. Why is it important to prioritize the mental health benefits of social media managers?
You know, I love social media, and there's so much to be gained and learned, and there's so much creativity out there. But there's also a lot of toxic behavior. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ugliness, and your social media manager sees that every day. And not only that, social media never ever turns off. So sometimes it's hard for a social media manager, and particularly a younger or new social media manager, to know when to turn it off. And they might have this obligation. They feel an obligation to be plugged in all the time. And if you're doing this profession for a length of time, it's tough. And burnout is high within the profession.
Based on the research and the statistics you have in that chapter, it just blew my mind. I did not know that.
Oh.
The pressure they're under, it's amazing. And, you know, you talk about how folks are having to be exposed to all this stuff. You're talking to somebody that couldn't stand Facebook and Instagram anymore. For mental health reasons, I had to let
right.
it go. And
right.
I'm thinking these folks are having to deal with that all day, and some of them are having to filter through some really awful things. Ugh, it's just
that's exactly right.
And a lot of them are looking to stop that job, and they don't last very long in that position.
Right.
A lot of depression with the social media folks, and it led me to this one very, very important part. And for anyone who's feeling that way, I want you to really pay attention here. You write that it's really difficult, if not impossible, to pull yourself out of burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you can't, it's almost impossible to pull yourself out of burnout. Talk about what some of the things are people should do, and it's okay to ask for help.
Right. I think that's the big thing, is that you need to recognize what burnout is and what it feels like. I think one thing I learned is that when you know, a lot of social media managers, when they think they're starting to feel stressed out or starting to feel burnout, it's not, they're well into it, you know, or well into burnout and maybe starting to feel depression, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. So I think that it's important for us to recognize what early burnout is, what it feels like, and to then take steps for our own wellness, and also, you know, and ask for help. You know, there is no shame in like talking to your doctor, your colleagues, you know, hopefully you have a good relationship with your supervisor, or you can tell your supervisor that you're feeling burnout, and not just in sort of like a colloquial way, but like in a clinical way,
Yeah, and you have some very specific things there about things you can talk to your supervisor about. And then you step it up where you go, okay, let's say they don't agree to that. Here's the next thing you should probably, here's the next concept you should introduce. Oh, it was terrific.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Yeah. I just said, well, will you help me monitor the comments? Or, you know, they should offer to help.
Yeah, and it's also there's another line where you write, the expectations of social media managers are stuck in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. So just one other quick question. Why do you think the phrase work-life balance is a misleading one?
I was chasing work-life balance for a lot of years. And again, it comes back to the visual thing, because I think I'm a visual person. Mm-hmm. When I think of balance, I think of that scale, you know, the scale of justice and how it's like perfectly in balance. Like, when is that even possible? Like for me, I just think you can't, that's not something that's sustainable to have equilibrium on both sides. I think our real life, you know, is more like a deck of cards.
Yes, talk about the deck of cards.
Yeah,
it's like back to that tree.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you shuffle. It's a deck of cards because there's so many things in your life, right? You like parents and children, and you know, like your refrigerator will break, and then all of a sudden that's a priority that day.
Or you call Yale Appliance, but I digress.
Exactly. Thank you. We've come full circle. Nice. So I just think that, you know, you shuffle and it's sometimes like, it's like your basement flooding is the priority of the day. And where's the work-life balance that, you know, it's like it all sort of goes out the door. Or if three of your family members are sick, then you're just barely making it, you know? So I just think that it's whatever the priority is of the moment, and you take care of it. And, you know, whether it's your mental health, or whether it's like you have a flat tire, or whether you just kind of take it one thing at a time. And overall, you know, I think you'll find that you're doing okay.
Oh, great advice. Okay. Just one other thing I want to ask you about. And again, it's because your book and this conversation is serving as a support group, because there are so many things you talk about in your book.
I appreciate that.
I've wanted to pull my hair out. It's like, stop saying, you know, again, you have incredible patience. But if you could talk about the myths and unrealistic expectations of wanting something to go viral. what we should strive for instead. And it's funny when you say, I want to reach everyone. For you, it's what the poker players call, it's a tell that they haven't thought it through.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I have been in conversations over the years talking to somebody and they start talking about email and they go, well, we want to, they use the word blast. If the word blast ever sneaks into a conversation about email, it's a tell. And the same thing when somebody talks about going viral. So talk about the myth of that and what you recommend we should strive for instead.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because early within social media and being a social media professional, you know, people would ask for, the viral video was the thing that everyone was chasing after. Can you create a viral video? And it doesn't work that way. You know, like, yeah, like if I could on the drop of a hat, man, I would be a wealthy person right now.
Yeah, it's like, can you make me a marathon winner?
Right, exactly. And can you crank one out every month, right? So it's just, it's a little misleading. And it just seemed like that's what everyone was chasing after. But I think we have to realize now things can go bad viral.
If you want something viral, there's some really awful things you can do.
Yeah, I kind of joke about it. I'm like, or I joke about it with my social media manager friends, because we're like, oh, you want that to go viral? I could make it go viral for you.
I got
you.
Your viral right here.
Exactly. And that's really scary. You know, I just don't think that's what we should be going after. I really think it's more like just slow and steady to build your community, I think, is what really we should, you know, be chasing after, and just doing well.
Yes, and now there are, as I mentioned to you before we started recording, there's listeners in over 185 countries, and I'm now going to do something that upsets a lot of people, particularly the Europeans. And this isn't going to upset anyone from the United States or Mexico, the Dominican Republic, Korea, or Japan, I would think.
Okay.
And that's talk about baseball, all right?
Oh, yes, right. Yes.
So yes. You talk about how wanting something to go viral is like wanting a grand slam every time.
Every single time.
Yeah, and that's when the batter hits the ball over the fence and there's three people on base, so they score 4 points.
Yes.
Rarely happens. And they're saying, well, can you just hit a grand slam? And you argue, which reminds me of the book Moneyball. You said, yes. Really, if you could just get on first base.
Yes. Yes, I'm more about having a consistent batting average.
Yes.
And getting on first base.
In that story, they talked about how the Oakland Athletics, which are now moving to Las Vegas, they didn't have a whole lot of money, and they started looking at a lot of big data, and they realized that they didn't need these big, expensive sluggers who hit more home runs. They needed people who could get on first base.
We're more consistent, right, in Moneyball. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And they ended up doing really well. They, won a lot of games.
Yes, they did. They did very well. So, well, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
This is a very hard question.
I know. It's very unfair, and it should come with a warning label.
Yeah. So I would say own your own expertise. You know, like just take heart that you know what you're doing and believe in yourself. Like, don't doubt it. But, you know, there are measured and professional and tried and true ways to show the expertise, right?
Yes, and they probably know more than they realize.
Yes, yes, yeah, it's true.
You know what's funny, again, back to my emotions, which I rarely talk about, but when I read Anne Handley's book, Everybody Writes, she lives in Boston, mm-hmm. And she's been on twice for the first and second issue. It's a great book for anyone who has to write and anyone who works in social media marketing. It's a Wall Street Journal bestseller.
Oh, nice.
But I remember after I read it the first time years ago, it's as if whenever I was writing after that, Anne was sitting there with me going, hey, you're doing fine. Yeah, this is fine. And I have a kind of a similar feeling with this. It's sort of like reading through it. It was sort of a support group, but it was also like, I'm not the only one that's thinking these things. And, you know, this works for Jenny. And so I hope more people will read this and that they'll reach out to you. So
I love that. Thank you.
So it's like, with this book, folks, you get a Jenny Lee Fowler hug. Okay.
I love it.
Virtual hug.
Yes.
So let's give the listeners a first step to take. What is one thing a listener could do today to put in action one of the ideas from your book that we've talked about to get them sort of thinking in the right direction?
I think it's best not to be so reactive. I think social media is constantly moving and everyone wants to be the first or, you know, do all, like, be everywhere and do all the things. But I think that we just need a little bit more thought before the actions and just to slow down and, you know, think about everything, read the room and, you know, ask for help and ask for opinions. And I would say just to slow down and not be so reactive.
Yes, more of a ready, aim, fire approach. And the other thing is that in the book, you write several times about how there really isn't a benefit to being the first on a particular channel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you also said, there was a very funny line where you said, I've never heard of a company that claims that there is not a social media channel they're not on. Or something like that.
Oh, no. I think I know what you're talking about. I've never heard anyone say, oh, do you follow so-and-so on this platform? They were the first ones on that channel. I never hear anyone say anything. Like, people will say, do you follow so-and-so on YouTube? Gosh, they have great content. Or do you follow so-and-so on TikTok? They're super funny. Like, no one has ever said, like, did you follow so-and-so on Threads? They were the first. Like, right. No one says that. So,
yes.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we should concentrate less on trying to be the first and more on being one of the best.
Yes. Right? Yes. So there's quite a bit in the book about that. I hope that would arm folks who are having to manage up, particularly when it's management by InFlight Magazine. So, Jenny, looking back, what books have most inspired your working career?
Yes. So Atomic Habits one that I
it's James Clear?
Yes, mm-hmm. that I have actually recommended to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's been mentioned a lot on the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very popular.
Okay.
Yeah, he only has 123,000 Amazon reviews.
Yeah, that's it. So yeah. and it's actionable, you know? It's that I think that's why it's so helpful. Mm-hmm. You're going to laugh at this one, but Little Women?
Oh, Louisa May Alcott.
Yeah, it was very transformative for me, you know? Just reading about like just the lives of independent women, you know? Mm-hmm. That's when that stuck with me.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I'm like, if you haven't read it or if you have forgotten about it and want to reread it, I think you should reread it.
Oh, interesting. Now, that has not been suggested, but there's a reason why it's one of the most famous pieces of literature in American literature.
Yeah. And I think there's one, like you said, I think you were also going to ask, like, what my next read or what I wanted to read next.
Yeah. You see, folks, yeah. Jenny's just being really polite and nice about saying, Douglas, can we wrap this up?
No,
I'm teasing.
It's more like, I hope he doesn't ask me more books because I can't, it's those
no,
two that
no,
have come to
great,
mind.
That's great.
Yeah.
Little Women, these don't have to be marketing or sales books. Folks, don't only read marketing or sales books. The thing I was going to ask is, are there any recent or upcoming books you recommend? Because now you probably run with a whole lot of these authors. There's like a secret society out there.
No,
a secret handshake and everything.
Well, the one that that was recently recommended to me that I'm wanting to read next is Hidden Potential by Adam Grant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also currently, I'm a word nerd. And so for all my word nerds out there, Jess Savaris has recently written Words from Hell, and it's the entomology? No.
I brought it up here. It's Words from Hell, Unearthing the Darkest Secrets of English Etymology?
Etymology. That's right. I always get that rude wrong. But it shows you the history of like all of these really like naughty words through society. And it's fascinating because she quotes these, you know, like Shakespeare, like, you know, excerpts. Uh-huh. And I didn't know in high school what I was reading because I didn't understand it. But now when she explains it, I'm like, man, Shakespeare was really naughty.
Oh, behave.
Yes, exactly. So I'm you know, enjoying that one right now.
Yeah, I'm looking up here. It says dirty-minded word nerds like Jenny Lee Fowler and lewd
exactly.
linguistic lovers will derive unadulterated pleasure in leering at the origins of swear words, sexual lingo, inappropriate idioms, violent vocabulary, and terminology for bodily functions, not to mention the unexpectedly foul origins of words you thought were perfectly innocent. Yeah. Wow.
It's funny.
Yeah. I was called a lot of really bad things when I was being yelled at when I was in the Army. So I always wondered what they meant. And
or where they came from.
Yes, or where they came from. I often wanted to say, Sergeant, you know, let's talk about those words you're using. No, I knew better than to say something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, terrific. At marketingbookpodcast.com, we're going to include links to everything linkable, including all the books that have been mentioned and to your LinkedIn profile and so forth. And now word to you, dear listener, please reach out to Jenny and congratulate her on this excellent book. You can see it, the impact it had on me. Thank her for being a guest on the Marketing Book Podcast, putting up with the host's nonsense. If nothing else, share this interview. Hey, that's like a social media thing. Share this interview on LinkedIn and tag us so we can thank you and interact with you publicly. And if you're listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app like Apple Podcasts, all these links can be found by going to this episode right now and clicking on this episode's website link. Jenny Lee Fowler, you're not going to get out of here without one more quote from page 197. My aim in writing this book is to make the learning curve for those entering this profession a little less steep. I'm passing along all the information I wish someone had told me early in my years managing social media. My hope is to get new social media managers to where I am in my career faster and to my fellow colleagues. I hope I gave you some things to think about and how we can progress the profession so that those who will eventually fill our positions will experience fewer growing pains than we did, and we can provide a clearer path forward to what might come after being a social media manager. The book is Organic Social Media, How to Build Flourishing Online Communities. The author is Jenny Lee Fowler. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you. It was just a joy. I'm grinning from ear to ear right now. It was so fun. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
It's the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Hey!